privilege to be here this morning, and thank you for your welcome. And Ruth and I feel very at home here. We have many friends. Just thinking about the connections we have with this church, first through OMF, John and Pearl Aitken, and Laura Jeffries, colleagues and friends from OMF, and Liz Ogborne, I think, there she is, who's doing such a wonderful work for us at Redland Church, helping us reach into local schools, sharing the love and the gospel of Christ with children in schools. And just thinking back, we've heard the name Cunningham this morning, Fiona Cunningham, and I don't know if it's a direct connection, but when Ruth and I came to Bristol a long time ago, young adults, David Cunningham was the first person who welcomed us, and I actually lived in his house for 6 weeks as we were house hunting. And so it's lovely that we have these links, different fellowships in Bristol. And one of my hopes for today is that by sharing with you, we can begin or continue exploring how we can work together in what is a very challenging and difficult area of our lives. So this is the topic I've been given, Save the Planet, Why Bother? Very provocative question. What I want to do is to first look at what the Bible says, 6 key points that will help us answer that question. I then want to look very briefly at how we're doing, kind of appraisal. How are we caring for the planet? And that will then lead into discussions in table groups around how do we respond to our current situation. And as Andrew said, I hope that will then lead into some Q&A and that conversation or those conversations can continue after this time together, this service, and beyond. So, first, these key biblical themes. First of all, to stress that the creation is very good. You remember in Genesis 1, the account of creation, each day God appraises what he has made and sees that it was good. And then at the end of the 6th day, we're told God looked at the whole thing, the whole of creation, and saw that it was very good. And often when we engage with people of other faiths, they miss this point. For some, creation or material things are inherently evil, and only the spiritual is good. But this is not a Christian worldview. So the creation is very good. It pleased God. He made it for a reason, and it pleased him. It was very good. Secondly, mankind was placed in creation as part of creation and given a purpose in creation to work it and take care of it, or literally to serve and guard. Very strong words in the Hebrew. So we are part of creation. We were made out of the earth. Adam means dust. We are made from the same material, the same stuff as the rest of creation, but we also have this particular responsibility to work it and take care of it. And this responsibility was not affected by the subsequent fall, the sin of Adam and Eve, and all that flowed from that. And right through the Old Testament, we see many reminders that we are meant to continue in this role of working and taking care of creation. But although we have this responsibility, we have not been given creation as of right. We don't own it. We don't own any part of it. The Lord reminds us that the land is mine. It's God's. and you are, us people, are but aliens and my tenants. So the gift of creation to us comes with responsibilities. And another theme in the Old Testament that we can explore is that this very strong connection between sin and brokenness of the whole creation. This is just one example from Hosea chapter 4, where the prophet is challenging the people in their, what he calls their adultery, their faithlessness. And this is what he says: there is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. Because of this, the land mourns, or literally in the Hebrew, it is dried up. And all who live in it waste away, not just people, but the beasts of the field and the birds of the air and the fish of the sea are dying. And so I just want to emphasize the connection between the sinfulness, the lack of faithfulness of the people, and what we would now call the ecological impacts of that sin. And it resonates with us. We are seeing more and more how the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea are dying. This is a very prophetic word from Hosea, and we'll look in a minute at some of the implications of that. But God didn't leave the situation there. The prophet spoke into that situation to challenge the people to return to him, to repent and return. And then, of course, God was pleased. He took the initiative to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his the Son, Jesus' blood, shed on the cross. And this is from what's called a Colossians hymn, where this phrase, all things, is repeated 6 times. And I think you could say that any bad teaching about Jesus tends to limit the scope of his lordship and the scope of his plan and work of salvation. Because creation is good and God cares about it, and we've messed up, human beings have messed up, God has this plan, this work of reconciliation and restoration. And this is why, as Christians, we both need to take our predicament very seriously, but we are also people of hope. Because we know that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. This is Paul in his letter to the Romans. Again, the scope of salvation, of restoration, of renewal will encompass, embrace the whole creation. So that's a very brief overview of the biblical teaching, and we can explore some of these themes later on. And do come back if you have any thoughts or questions about that. But now moving on to how are we doing? Given the challenge, our mandate to care for creation, how are we doing? Well, there are different ways of looking at this. One of them is an ecological footprint. You can see here, big footprint, black footprint. And these are graphs of ecological footprints of different countries. So you can see 2 lines on these graphs. Take the UK at the top. The green line at the bottom is what the land can sustain over a long period of time in terms of our impacts on the ecology, the soil, all the system that makes for a healthy land. And you can see our footprint, which is the top line, the pink line, is way in excess of what is sustainable, something like 3 times. Our impact on the land is 3 times what it ought to be for long-term healthy living, if you like, in the land. And there are these graphs available online for any country you choose to name. I've just put China there because you can see the very rapid deterioration of the situation in China. From about 1970, when there was a sustainable economy, sustainable in terms of ecology, the situation has got much, much worse. But the thing I want to stress about this is that we are part of the same system. And actually, our graph should be far worse, far higher than is drawn here, because in this economy, in Britain and many developed nations across the world, we have actually exported most of our ecological footprint to China and other nations. So the dirty industry we used to have in this country, we've exported. So I want to stress this connection between different countries, and that this is part of one global economy that is deeply unsustainable. Another way of looking at this is to think of the whole Earth as one biological or biosphere, one system of life on the skin of this planet. And there's this concept of planetary boundaries. So if you imagine you have a bank balance, well, you understand that if you spend more than, take out more than you put in, then you're going to get into debt, you'll get into trouble. The green area on this diagram shows what is sustainable in the long term for various different kinds of metric, different aspects of our impact on the planet. And you can see our actual impact in at least three main areas is way in excess of what planet Earth can tolerate sustainably. So I want to look at these three main excesses, areas where we are exceeding the capacity of planet Earth. The first is climate change. I think there's now almost overwhelming evidence that the world economy is putting pressure on the climate system that is leading to very, very severe impacts. Now, most of the examples I'm going to give you are from East Asia, where Ruth and I have been working with OMF for the last 12 years. But they are typical, and you will have stories from other contexts. We've heard Ella is going to Latin America. There will be stories from different parts, particularly of the global south, of severe impacts. But just from East Asia, first we have very severe typhoons in parts. This is in the central Philippines, Typhoon Haiyan, November 2013, when the biggest typhoon to hit land ever came to the Visayas, eastern Visayas in the Philippines. Over 6,000 people were killed, and almost 4 million people were displaced. That's the whole of the southwest of England. Can you imagine the whole of the southwest of England having to move because their houses were destroyed? Then there is drought. This is from southwest China, Yunnan, where one of the most well-watered parts of the country suffered 4 years of very severe drought. Quite recently, in the last few years, so that reservoirs were empty, children had to walk across mountains to get fresh water, and so on. And yet, suddenly, there was torrential rain, and you can see the top right, a picture of whole villages being buried in landslides following this torrential rain. And in the bottom right, many parts of the earth are getting drier. This is from Inner Mongolia, but Tibet, parts of Africa, and so on are becoming much drier. So the traditional pasture, grazing land, is drying out, and you can see the impact of that on nomadic people and indigenous people groups in different parts of the world. And then we have the warming of the biosphere, and particularly the rising sea level across the planet. The graph here shows you average temperatures, land and sea, over the last century. There is a very definite trend upwards. And this picture is of the Maldives, a predominantly Muslim country in the Indian Ocean, which will probably be inundated within the next 20 or 30 years. So in the news, we are thinking a lot about migration, and we are thinking of it in terms of war and political unrest and so on. But I think there is very strong evidence or projections that suggest that we will also be facing huge ecological pressures for migration. Whole nations in the Pacific and the Indian Oceans will have to move. Secondly, biodiversity loss. Since we, in the last 40 years, half the mammals, half the land-based animals on this planet, the numbers of creatures have halved. This is absolutely mind-blowing. And then we have the problem of loss of species. On the left here, you can see the threats to different kinds of animal species. And so if you think of the care God put into making each animal after its own kind, that phrase repeats, we are seeing loss of species. The graph, the bottom right, shows that we are just at the beginning of this impact, that this is showing over the next several decades, the likely loss of whole groups of species because of climate change and severe economic impact. The Sumatran rhino is down to 20 or 30 individuals on Earth, just one example. One main reason, there are many reasons for this loss of animal life and species, but one of them is loss of habitat, particularly tropical rainforests. And this just tells you an area the size of England, every year we are losing that amount of forest. And this is heartbreaking as you look at the impact of this destruction. That's on the land. It's the same picture in the ocean. This is what's called a coral triangle in Indonesia and the Philippines, which is the richest area of marine biodiversity on Earth. The red dots are corals that are in severe degradation, partly to do with acidification of the ocean, but also coastal development, excessive fishing, the fish we eat in this country. A lot of it comes from this part of the world. We are living unsustainably. The third main excess, our way of life impacting on the planet, is chemical pollution. And this may be less obvious to you. Climate change is well known and discussed. Loss of species is becoming more better understood. But this problem of chemical pollution across the planet is also very severe. And many examples of this. This is algae bloom in China. And the next picture shows the same thing in the Atlantic, just you can see near us, where excessive amounts of fertilizer in the land is washing into the ocean and causing these disruptions of the ecological balance in the ocean. These are just two examples of pollution, chemical pollution in the biosphere. And there are many, many aspects to this ecological crisis. I've just given you three. But in fact, there are many different parts to this, and they all interrelate in different and complex ways. And so the lifestyle you ordered is currently out of stock. This is a Banksy graffiti in London. The thing is, we are living unsustainably. You may feel that you've not got a lot to spend. You're struggling to make ends meet or whatever. But generally speaking, across the planet, we are consuming more of the Earth's resources than the Earth can stand. So I want to leave you with four thoughts about what I call thinking and doing. We've talked about stuff. Material creation is good. The whole of it is very good. And when you think about it, Jesus identifies totally with creation in the incarnation. He took on the form of a servant. He tabernacled. He dwelt among us. He identified with his creation in the incarnation and then on the cross dying to make it possible for his creation to be healed. So stuff is not bad, but we can get carried away. And I want you to think about, where does stuff come from? And this whole culture of excessive consumption. This is just one example, a ridiculous bit of kit called an eye potty. Now, this is the kind of thing that, marketing people invent. We don't need these things, but we don't even want it until somebody puts a picture in. But somebody may think, wow, I want that thing. So we out there, we are in a world, a dominant culture that pushes stuff at us all the time. But where does stuff come from? Here is just one example of the mining of what are called rare earths for computers, mobile phones, and so on. You need precious metals. And the environmental impact of mining and so on can be really horrendous. Secondly, the second thing to think about is, where does stuff go to? We talk about throwing away, but actually there's no such place as away. When we throw away, our stuff goes somewhere. So here are two pictures. At the top, the girl looking just like we sweep under the carpet. We're actually throwing a huge amount of stuff into the ocean. And the bottom picture is a mountain of waste, what's called electronic waste, e-waste. And here's a picture from Guangdong province of a young girl burning electronic waste to just get a bit of precious metal out of the motherboards and so on. The third thing is, as a response, to cultivate wonder and gratitude for God's creation. Here's Ruth and I are blessed with five grandchildren. And here is Finley sitting on a beach looking at these cats. And I was looking at him. And this went on for at least an hour. I was amazed at his wonder at these cats. And it made me think a lot about childhood and the values we share with our children and grandchildren. Do we cultivate a sense of wonder? And the last thought, thinking and doing, is around mission. That's very much what I'm concerned with, both here and within OMF, the peoples of East Asia. How can we bring a prophetic voice into this situation that is also hopeful and points to the lordship of Christ, that he has overcome the world and has a plan of restoration, of salvation and renewal for his creation? Well, here's just one example. On the left, the lady there, Jenny Fung, is a marine biologist. And you remember the storm I showed you in the Philippines. OMF were invited to go and to help in a number of ways. She was working with orphans here, sharing Bible stories with them, telling them about the gospel. But she was also, as a marine biologist, invited to go and research new ways of livelihood, sustainable livelihood. And she came up with the idea of seaweed farming, and that is now being developed in these coastal communities who lost all their fishing boats and so on. So these are just a few thoughts about thinking and doing. And what I want to do now is to leave you with these three questions and ask each table, I'm just going to be very prescriptive here, and give you each table a number. So these are these three questions. How can we reduce our footprints, our ecological footprints? The amount of stuff we consume and thinking more about where our, what we throw away and where to. How can we cultivate, practice wonder and gratitude as part of our walk of faith? And how can we engage in mission to people in tough places? So if I may, I'm just going to give you each table a number. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Now time is moving on. I don't know how long we have for this. But if you would like in your tables to just wrestle with the question I've given you, and then, what, 5 minutes? Yeah, 5 minutes, we'll ask for some responses. Okay, I'm afraid I'm going to have to break in. It's great to see you having these conversations. But I would like to invite one person, perhaps from each table, to share one idea, one thing that's really resonated as you've discussed this. And I'm hoping we're going to hear about how this impacts you individually, or as a part of a family, people you're living with, if you're a student, but also in the life of this church. What can you do together in response to these three questions? So let's start with question one. How can we reduce our ecological footprint? So all the table ones, can we start over here?
Eco-saving device, and that is the LED bulb. Basically, a quarter of the world's energy is taken up in lighting, and LED bulbs is the latest invention or latest development of lighting. And say, I saw yesterday on the internet a bulb which is 60 watt equivalent, but it runs at 6.2 watts. Has practically a 90% efficiency, and it's pretty much a no-brainer in every sense. They are, the light is the same. You can get the same color that you want. You plug, you put them in. They save you money, like with less than a year, and they last like 20 years. So you'll never, I don't know, fall off your chair and break your neck trying to change them. Literally, they will. So yeah.
LED bulbs at home and in the church. So two, three. Were you one over here?
Who would like to speak? Well, you may have noticed that the church has gone one better and we've stopped using lighting at all.
Any other thoughts?
No? We were just discussing. Sorry. A lot of what we were discussing was just like the trade-offs, because, well, with examples, reusable nappies and all the washing and the other environmental costs you bring in with that. So trying to make sure that your decisions were completely correct.
Thank you. Who else has won?
Not having children. No, we did talk about population. We also talked about the amount of rubbish that children bring into your lives in terms of stuff, and having to ask the question, do we really need it? Because of the pressures of marketing and all that kind of stuff.
It's not the number of children. A child born in this country will consume on average 30 times more than a child born in Kenya. So it's not the number of children, it's what they consume. One over here. Sorry. Any other ones? Okay, let's move on to twos. Who's a two over here? How to cultivate wonder.
Yeah, we spoke individually about some aspects of the creation that cause us to wonder individually, and such as beautiful beaches in Malaysia and the blue sky in the UK and mountaintops and not taking those things for granted. And then we started to think about how we do that as a group of Christians or as a church. And we didn't get very far because we didn't have enough time, but a very good practical example was about grace at mealtimes in your family or your setting, just being thankful for the food that has come from somewhere.
Thank you. Two? No? Over here.
I think we felt it was a matter of just pausing every now and then to enjoy what's around us, and maybe turning it sometimes into a little thank you prayer, quick one, because there are beautiful things all around us, you know, just like today's wonderful. Yeah, that was about it, really. I think we're waiting for somebody else to come up with.
Okay. One of you must be a two. Over here.
I think the only extra thing we said was we talked about appreciating the seasons. And obviously George hasn't had the same experience of that in Cambodia, but we just said how, we take it for granted and yet it's amazing how the seasons change. Liz is trying to love winter and hasn't got there yet.
Thank you. Right. Three. Are you a three?
We were a bit off topic most of the time. We covered one and three quite nicely. No, one and two quite nicely. But, one thought I had was, we dissected the impact of mobile phones on society, and negative and positive. And I think one thing was that it was so much more easy to kind of lobby people in power through technology. And that's, we've seen that this week, which has been fantastic. So, I think that's, yeah.
Over here, you as three.
I don't really know what we said. We talked about a contrast between the tough places and living here and how it's so good here. But the need for compassion, really, to motivate us and to be thinking of places far away, even if we're not necessarily going there. The seaweed lady, yes, I didn't want to harp on about the seaweed lady, but I particularly like the seaweed lady because she's a very good example of the kind of thing that we could support in different places and just how God used her gifts. Eventually used more of them than she imagined. Yeah.
Have I missed any tables? Yeah, well, do pray for Jenny. She's been twice to the Philippines now. It was lovely that she was invited back by the local community. She won trust, and she is developing these new businesses around seaweed. And I think what I've just heard from Ella, hopefully you'll have opportunities like that, and others will be inspired by what you will be doing. So I'm sure time is running out. Are there any burning questions that you really want to come out with just now?
Sorry.
I'm just wondering, in your mind, is there any hope for the environment, realistically?
I think we are facing really tough times. I think it's going to get a lot worse. One analogy that I find very powerful is, you know, Jesus' teaching about Jerusalem, his heart for the city. Even on the way to Golgotha, he was praying, lamenting the future of Jerusalem. He could see what was coming. AD 70, the Roman invasion, 4 years of terrible war, 1 million people died, and the dispersal of the people. It was an awful time. But out of that came new beginnings. The church spread. So I think we have to be prepared for tough times. I think it's going to get a lot worse. And we need to wrestle with tough issues like immigration. How many people can we welcome in this country? How can we grow more food here? How can we recycle much more? And how can we consume far less? We need to prepare for tough times and look beyond. Always look beyond. Look to the new creation that's already started and will continue and will come in its fullness. We must be people of hope. That's how I say it. Well, please continue these conversations in groups, in families, wherever, and as a church. If I can help in any way, just now, if you want to continue any conversation with me, I'd be delighted, or at a later time. Thank you.